Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is, I'm going to get right to it because I know she has a lot to say, Michelle Spitz, who was a guest with us about 2 years ago. Michelle is woman of her word, uses her voice for other people's causes, and you have been doing a lot of narration for the blind. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so what has happened since then? And I'm gonna hope that you and I, our paces are a little crazy. And so I'm going to hope, I know, we're kind of competing members of the Lose Your Breath, Lose Your Turn Club. So I'm just going to go to you. And would you please tell us what has happened since we last spoke? Because I know things have expanded enormously in your professional and philanthropic life, which are kind of interwoven, right?
That's correct.
Okay, you talk.
Oh, it's been a remarkable 2 years since we first spoke. And at the time, I was involved with the Disability Film Festival, Superfest.
Mm-hmm.
This is my third year coming into working with Superfest and supporting them.
Why don't you just start with telling us what the Disability Film Festival is, if you would, because some people may not know.
Yeah.
And it's huge, isn't
it's
it?
It's big. Superfest is a very large disability film festival where they have... Oh, perhaps maybe 500 films that are sent to them annually. And they choose certain films to premiere at their festival once a year. So it's a two-day event. And I happen to do the audio description for select films.
Audio description, thank you. That's what you call it instead of narration, right?
Narrating for the blind. Okay. And it's a wonderful film festival, and they support a lot of different communities, not just the films being about a disability, but disabled individuals who have actually created the films.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a wonderful selection of films. This is their 30th anniversary this year, and it will be on October 22nd and 23rd. So I'm very proud and honored to be involved. My other involvement, and I've been going to the East Coast in addition to the West Coast. I've spent the last year in the East Coast sort of shadowing disability accessibility in the arts at large. And I've been noticing a lot
disability
of...
Disability accessibility. You want to make events and cultural events accessible to everyone, no matter what the disability.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. The East Coast has a very sort of advanced programming already in place for a long time. They have a lot of funding to support it. The museums are all accessible to different disabilities and
so what is it? What does that mean in ways that we can really understand that?
Well,
for example, a museum
mm-hmm.
accessible to people who are blind or hearing impaired. What do they do?
They have different programs in place, really beautiful, elaborate programs. They have audio described tours that they can take, docent-led tours, tactile tours.
Oh, tactile tours. So for people whose sight is impaired, and
right.
they can still... I see.
Experience
okay.
museums and docent-led just visual descriptions of what is in the museum per se. But not only that, they have autism programming for autism individuals and dementia. There's so many different things they're working towards, but all the museums...
So things are tooled to be understandable by whatever people bring to that
and
exhibit?
And to expand it, to have them sort of immersive programming. They're involved. It's integrated. It's very different. And so a lot of what I've witnessed, I'd like to see come towards the West Coast because we're behind them in that particular way. But that's part of what I've been observing on the East Coast in addition to programming for the live theater for autism audiences. And also I became involved with another disability film festival in New York called Real Abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my second year with them. And I have just...
What do?
They also do this similar to Superfest.
They're so it's like film festivals where they show movies.
About disability.
Both, okay.
And whether or not, as I said before, disability as far as subject matter or those involved in it. And it's for all communities. It's not just for disability.
Mm-hmm.
It's for all communities. So that particular festival is quite large. It goes to multiple cities, and it runs for about a week. So
mm-hmm.
I just finished audio describing and voicing opening and closing night for the festival. In New York, and I'm flying in this week for the festival. So it's my second year being involved with them, and it's a wonderful festival as well. Both Superfest and Real Abilities are really quite wonderful.
What do you do for Easter Seals?
Right now,
right now
I'm just going to be voicing their new brand video, and they came to me through part of a panel I hosted in New York. educating filmmakers about audio description and captioning, and they located me from that sort of publicity, and then they reached out to me, so I'm looking forward to voicing their brand video.
How can we hear your work? Is there someplace we can go? Right. Outside, if we're not at the Real Abilities or some, you know, the film festivals?
Some of the films, depending on what I've done, will be on DVD through Amazon.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Some are on iTunes. And some will be located differently. I hope they'll be streaming films eventually.
Will you say the names of some then? So if people want to look for the... Thank you. You're smiling. I'm glad you're going to do that.
A couple of films that weren't related specifically to that festival, but I've also donated my voice and had the production done, was Becoming Bulletproof. That's now on iTunes and Amazon. That just came out.
What is that?
A wonderful film. It's a film about a disability camp in Southern California, and they make films with that community every summer, and this one profiles a Western that was under production, and it's a great film. It's so much fun, and so I took that on as a project, and I donated my voice to do that film. States of Grace is also a wonderful film.
And what is that about?
That's our local story here. That's about...
I've heard of that.
That's Grace Damon, who was a physician, and she had had a head-on collision on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, God.
And she has taken this film around and spoken to colleges as well as to hospitals in terms of educating them, compassionate care issues, so on and so forth. It's quite a journey, that film. It's a wonderful film. Now, a lot of the films, if you go to their website directly, you'll be able to purchase the film from the website. If not, maybe you'll be able to stream it, perhaps. So those are a couple of films. And another one, Do You Dream in Color, was a wonderful film that profiles four blind youth, sort of their life stories. And that was screened at the Metropolitan Museum for the 80th anniversary.
And the title is from, I mean, is that a question that people do ask people who...
No, it's interesting. The filmmaker, when I asked her that, Do You Dream in Color, why did you choose that? It started with a different theme. And they decided just to keep that theme. And it was an interesting title. It's sort of, it doesn't really relate specifically to the film, but it's what she chose to keep with the film. It's a wonderful, wonderful
because
film.
Because it does make you think, that title alone.
Yeah.
Like, what is dreaming for people who have never seen an image? Do you know what it is? I'm so interested now.
I don't, but I think the filmmaker would have more of a response to that than I will.
Okay.
But it's a wonderful story. It's a very true story as far as their journeys are concerned, and I think it's a beautiful film. It was in Real Abilities. It will be in Real Abilities next week, and it also was in Superfest. So it's had a wonderful run. And I'm also involved in New York Women in Television Film, and I have provided the first grant ever for the annual disability film that is chosen every year, that's provided a larger grant to complete production. And I decided that since the film was about disability, that I needed to offer a grant to make sure it was accessible to those communities. So I'm the first ever to have offered an audio description grant, and I'll be voicing an upcoming film called Swim Team, which is about a group of young boys in New Jersey who are autistic, and they participate in a swim team, and it sort of shifts their paradigm. And this will be coming out within the next few months. So it's another film that I decided to donate my time towards. And ultimately, these films, Lighthouse for the Blind, for example, is doing a wonderful program for film clubs every week.
What do they do?
They screen the films with open description, meaning they don't have to wear headsets, and it has the description for everyone to sit through, and they have a Q&A afterwards, and typically their films come from the library, so they're more commercialized films. So I have offered to speak...
Adventures, that kind of romance, popular.
We see in the theaters. A lot of the big distributors will then donate them to the libraries, and the libraries will then donate them to Lighthouse. I decided to offer Lighthouse to bring my films, should the filmmakers be interested, to donate their films to the film club. And so I have four films now that have decided they will do that, which is wonderful because that gives them access to these independent films about disability.
You know, I wonder, do you ever get any word from people who have seen the movies that you've audio described or programs that you've supported, to let you know what their reaction or how it's changed or whatever effect it may have had on their lives? Because I think most people grow up not knowing people who are either deaf, or blind or immobile for a variety of reasons. You know, we live kind of insular lives, and this is a wonderful way for people to get to know others.
I think that's true. I think that there are, believe it or not, there's, I think, two sets of communities here. Many that actually don't go to the theaters too much because it's too much of...
too hard.
Well, it's a nuisance. A lot of times the equipment's not working, it's the wrong equipment, so on and so forth. I think it's easier now because things are available being streamed. They can get DVD, they can get it in various ways. There's different libraries online.
Oh, so they can enjoy it at home. They don't have to.
They can.
But then what about the theater experience and the social part?
I think that's a nice part of it as well. Mm-hmm. And so right now, for example, in the UK, most of the theaters have audio description and their phones sync to the audio description. They don't have to wear a headset. They don't have to worry about equipment not working.
Oh, they just have a little earbud?
That's right. Ah. And that's the future for where we're all going to be going, but a lot of theaters now are still just using headsets. But Pixar, for example, just created their own technology for their Disney films, for the earpiece, for the phones. They're the first that we all sort of commercially know about right now. But I think that most people enjoy this experience once they have it. And the feedback I get is very positive. There's very different tones that narrate these films, and some more animated than others, and you know, they have to be a nice balanced place so you don't
this must end isolation for a lot of people. There has to be a certain kind of isolation that comes about if you are disabled in certain ways and there are no avenues for you to enjoy things.
I would hope that this encourages people to be out and about more as well.
You help people actually get out and about.
I do. That's a whole nother.
Can you talk about that for a minute? Because that's critical.
It is. It's wonderful. I've also been now for 4 years supporting disabled communities, and in addition to seniors and veterans and other people that are financially not in a position to be able to afford a lot of the different things to attend in the arts. Mm-hmm. And I've underwritten programs and donated my funds to make different things accessible.
So they get transportation, actually. I mean, physical.
Transportation was part of it at one time. Most of it is underwriting of tickets for attendance. Mm-hmm. So I have a senior excursion program I'm involved with James Sokol, a good friend, at the JCC in Marin. So they're able to attend different performances. I had a program with SF Jazz that Lighthouse would attend performances. They now are doing a different program at the JCC. They go to performances there. And then Deaf West Theater, which most people know about.
Yes.
Premiered with Deaf West Theater, premiered Spring Awakening at the Annenberg in Los Angeles. I funded the captioning for the audience at one of the performances, which is often requested. And Actors for Autism, classroom settings, wherever I feel and I can sort of donate my funds is what I attempt to do to expand this programming for everybody. But not only is it supporting these different communities as patrons so they can be part of this experience, it's also to support them to be an artist themselves should they like to be in any particular form. So it's on the stage, off the stage, and I really like them to have the opportunity to do both. I think this is the healing of the world for all of us,
okay, so
disabled and otherwise.
On that note, because my next question is, how did you come to this? I mean, this is a complicated world, and you didn't grow up in it. So what in you drew you to wanting to make the world an equally accessible place for everyone outside of your wonderful, adorable, inclusive personality in general? Or is that just the answer?
I think we talked about this briefly before. I still go back to the same core value that I had a long time ago.
Which is what?
Well, I kidnapped people most of my life. And, you know, seniors, children, and I wanted everyone to have this experience in the arts, whatever it was. So I basically took them in my pocket and took them wherever I could. And a lot of these individuals may not have otherwise wanted to go, may have not been exposed, could not afford it.
Kidnapping makes it easier, doesn't it?
Oh, I love it. I love it. It was great for them. It was great for me. But in addition to that,
How was it great for you? Because that's important.
Oh, the joy. I get so much joy.
The important and probably the answer.
It is. The joy.
I mean, you're beaming as you're talking. I need a television moment. Okay, go ahead.
I think the reaction of people when you share and you engage in experience together and you see the joy that someone gains or maybe the knowledge they otherwise wouldn't have had about something or the exposure to something new and then the inspiration to continue to follow suit, it really is, it's magical.
So you've kind of got the soul of a teacher in a way.
I don't know if I'm going to take that much credit, but I think a companion, maybe a companion. For someone to share these things with. And many of us need companions to do these type of things. But in addition to that, for a long time, I used to attend many different performances of different types.
You said as a child you always went for, as a very young person.
Yeah, and I would just sort evaluate the audience, the pink section.
Yes, okay.
The pink chronicle date book section in my hands.
Yes, okay.
I arrived on the planet with it in my hands.
Okay, so it is just still a natural tendency of yours.
Yeah, but I think one of the most important things is that I really spent a long time, I still do it, I'm sort of often evaluating the audiences. I want to see who made it out, who needs to make it out, who might like to make it out to these events. And not everybody does, but I suspect and strongly believe and have experienced that once they do, they're really glad they did. And that sort of answers your other question about who's going to enjoy the audio description, who's going to actually make use of this. I think once they have the experience, should they choose to have it, it can change a lot of things.
Well, that also answers the question, too, is there a teacher streak in you? Because that is what a good teacher does, opens up a world, and then students take it on their own.
I think that's a good point. And that actually brings me to another point.
What?
At this particular juncture, after having been involved on the panel in New York, which was co-hosted by Real Abilities and New York Women in Television Film, we educated filmmakers about considering including these components in their filmmaking process.
Which components?
Of the captioning, closed captioning, and interpreting, as well as audio description for their films as they go forward. So after that panel, I have decided that I would like to consider being a guest speaker at some film schools, colleges, and universities.
Oh, good for you.
And I'd like to talk to larger groups of youth, which is the next generation, to inspire them, enlighten them, really on a heart level, to understand why this would be a wonderful thing to consider and include.
While they're making movies, they might as well.
Yeah, and I think by the time they are fully integrated into their media world, audio description will be more advanced and more prominent. And so it will already be further in place. We're still in process of that technology. But Europe is far ahead of us.
What do they do?
Ways.
You mean in their movie making, actually?
Well, more in that their movie theaters, it's an automatic that it will be accessible to them. Movies I've done here, I've only seen in the theater a couple of times, and in the UK, it's all over. I'll look at a film and think, I can't believe this film was here a short period of time. It's all over the UK, repeatedly playing, for example.
Okay, about or made by people with disabilities.
No,
I thought you were talking about the physical setup of a theater accommodate.
That's ADA. That's something different.
Okay.
That's ADA. That's making a film a theater accessible for wheelchairs and what have you. In addition to that, is the making the technology more standard, as I said, with the earpiece. So this is more common there, as it is a little bit more in New York as well. And California is, the West Coast is also including a lot of this. I mean, AMC right now, there is something going on with AMC where their equipment wasn't working very well, and they're going to be required to update their equipment so that it is more effective.
You say they're going to be required.
Well,
who requires it?
Well, it'll be required by law, because there have been some deficiencies in it. So it's a good thing, so that the people that are going to the theaters don't have these issues and situations that take place. It's a hard enough journey to get there and get your headset. If it's not working, that's pretty frustrating. So I'm very glad that, in fact, this will change over time. But as I said, at one point, they won't need the headsets. They'll just have their earpiece in place. But we're coming a very long way, and we're going to be heading there even quicker than we probably imagine. But, for example, there are films that I will voice that are not disability-based and which I'm hired to do, like Miss You Already, which is one of the films that I happen to have voiced, or The Great Muppet Caper I did for, I think it's going to be cable ABC Family channel. A lot of the children's programming and television programming is already in place, and audio described and captioned for children, in addition to being in Spanish. From what I understand, now that's a new thing that's going to be happening or more of it. So a lot of television programming is in place, so you have the luxury of your home. That's a different thing altogether. Yeah. So television is going to be required to have more audio description as well.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, you really have done a lot more, and I guess you're going to just keep going because there's ever more to do. Because there are more groups. I mean, we talked about this once. You know, it's easy to think about in terms of people who can't see or can't hear to any degree, and the elderly.
That's right.
I mean, we do have to think of that as a group that needs some special help and attention.
Oh, absolutely. And many of that community already has some disability of hearing at some point or vision.
Oh, okay. So that dovetails in with getting older sometimes. But I'm just talking, yes. But then there are also children who are from families that can't afford tickets for things. But there are also children who are sick.
That's right.
What about that?
Oh, I feel very strongly about that.
I know you do.
That will be, as part of my endeavors going forward through Women of Her Word and the philanthropic arm of Women of Her Word.
Okay.
I am intending to incorporate programming that will be relevant in the world of medicine. And
in what way?
I hope to either perhaps do outreach programs where patients that may be outpatients in recovery underwrite programs where they can also participate in the arts, whatever that might be, or bring the arts to them. A lot of this exists already as far as healing in the arts and the visual arts and things like that, but something a little different, probably something a little bit more integrated and immersive.
Do you ever think in terms of getting involved with children's theater at all?
There's a great deal of work already around that, but that would be interesting. I mean, Deaf West Theaters we talked about is working with various ages, but possibly. I think there's something I've been feeling very strongly about for a long time, which whether it's children or adults or what have you, is in that recovery period of an outpatient where you have the ability to come and go with some freedom. I'd like some of these people, should they like to have it, to have an outing, per se. Something that takes them out of their setting.
That's what I was asking.
Yeah, and brings them into something else that they thoroughly enjoy. SF Jazz, for example, has wonderful programming for musicians, young musicians, for educating them, for participating, if that's something they would like. I need to do a little bit more research as I'm doing everything I do right now. I research various programs. I research disability and dance for youth. That's something I care a lot about as well. And it's wonderful, dancing for cerebral palsy or different disabilities.
Yes. I have a question about your family, if I may.
Yes.
Because I know that what your father did was, in a sense, creating inclusion for people who were out of town and didn't know anybody. I mean, it's a large leap, but it's on the same continuum.
It is, and it's very much exposing people to what's available to enjoy and embrace in every area.
How would they feel about if they knew right now what you were doing? What do you think they would be saying?
I think they would be thrilled. I think they would be delighted. I think they'd be surprised.
In what way?
That I was able to arrive at something so meaningful and be able to use my voice skills that have already been in place a long time, but I hadn't identified where that really needed to be.
Of course, you use more than your voice skills.
Yes,
I do. You use your voice skills, you use your resources, you use your whole heart.
I do.
And you use your need to include others to create an exceptional world.
That's right. That's right. I think it's a beautiful combination for me. I don't think there's any more comprehensive circumstance in which I could have created for myself. But I did like voice work all my life. I didn't spend a lot of time around it. I veered another direction of work, and then it came back around my way. And timing's everything in life.
That's true.
Was meant to be. This was certainly my calling.
At what point did you realize you had a voice that was memorable and could do this? How old were you when you first heard your own voice for the power it was?
Well, I would say I've done voice work on and off for years, but I think in relevance to audio description per se, which is narrating for the blind, this took place almost 3 years ago. And I would never have imagined in my wildest dreams this is where I would have arrived. If anyone had told me this 5-10 years ago, I would have thought they were crazy.
So this wasn't like you were a 6-year-old kid who knew that you had a voice that was
Oh, the voice was always there. I always was singing, and I always liked to
that's
use
what I'm
my
asking.
Voice.
Yes, okay.
But where it was supposed to really be, why I'm here, and what the calling is, not until 3 years ago. This is the best place for me to be. And whether it's an audio description for film or museums or corporate reasons for also the same purpose, I feel that there is no more wonderful direction to sort of direct your tone and your voice towards. At least for me, the end result is so rewarding for me.
I have a question, because I tend to look at things historically.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm just getting older, because I didn't used to. But there is something now about looking ahead. I mean, you're doing something important. You're doing something that's making some historical changes in how the world participates. And would it be nice for you to write something down in your own handwriting and stash it somewhere to be found in future generations? I like it. And if not, I mean, I think you're too modest for me to say, will you write a love letter to yourself?
I wouldn't write a love letter to myself.
But what would you write that we'd have some trail of you in your own handwriting for the future? That would eventually be transcribed into Braille and...
Well, that's a beautiful concept. That's a lovely concept. I think I would write a letter, and I think the letter would be to the community of the blind and the low vision, and it would be a letter of gratitude for this incredible gift that they've given me to do this type of work. And there is no greater gift that I've received in my life in terms of my personal career and my purpose.
Well, then that is something that we could see translated into Braille.
Absolutely.
And posted wherever
people... Absolutely.
Oh, will you do that?
I'd love to do that.
Okay. Okay, and maybe someday you'll come back and read it to us?
Oh, that would be lovely.
Okay. Oh, thank you for doing this with me. I'm so glad to know what else you're doing. I do find it a little dizzying how you can do so much, but probably I don't find it as dizzying as you do at times.
No, I love it.
Okay. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, there is always one lurking in your heart. All you have to do is reach in and find it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.